The most polarizing personalities worldwide. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
There it is. We got a little fade out for some reason. I don't understand. Technical difficulties to start the show, probably because there's just so much power tonight. I'm Dean Compton. Thanks for making your world a part of her dork world, his dork world. And with me, as always, the lovely, the talented, the brilliant, the devil fox herself, Emily Scott. Tell me what you've got.
Oh, man, well, it's great to be here, as always, and I don't know, it's just been a weird, I feel like my brain has gone into a sort of, like, nerd overload the last couple of days between getting ready for this show and talking Black Canary and reading lots of very strange Game of Thrones series after this last episode.
Yeah, everybody, so. Just in case you're wondering what kind of girlfriend Emily Scott is, last night, trying to be nice to her, trying to get a little attention, a little massage. She's like, I'm reading a Game of Thrones vlog. I do not believe I have time for your advances right now, kind sir. That's also a perfect impression of Emily. Like, she was not talking to everyone. Don't be fooled. That was me.
It is exactly what I sound like, as you can tell right
exactly
now.
Exactly how you sound in real life.
Spot on impression. But no, so I'm sort of a little, I did too much nerding.
Well, yeah, now you're going to have to go out and, like, lift a bunch of weights or something to make up for it. I don't know what ladies do to make up for dork stuff. Like, in my case, I'd be like,
I went for a
baseball
run.
Oh, yeah, it's true. It's true. You're in shape.
Not really, but I'm getting there.
I tell you, you run like a couple miles. I run to the refrigerator and back. And, you know, I'm sucking so much wind that you'd think we were in space because it would be like being in a vacuum. There's no oxygen around, all for me. We got a really great show tonight. Obviously, as always, Emily Scott bringing the. We're going to be talking about Black Canary a little later on with Ryan Daly. And he's got a great, great Black Canary blog, and that's how we found him. You can find that over at blackcanaryfan.blogspot.com. We're going to get to This Week in Dork Misogyny in just a second. But first, you want to join us tonight, talk about Black Canary, talk about anything on your mind, even a little Game of Thrones if you like. You can join us, 855-VOC-RADIO, 855-862-7234. This is VOC Nation. It is worldwide. It is live. For now, anyway. You can listen on the podcast later, of course. We do it all. We do it all. But before we get into This Week in Dork Misogyny, a new feature on the Her Dork World, His Dork World blog site at vocnation.com/I forget what the slash is. Just use the drop-down menu. That's a lot easier. But Emily has a great Etsy store, and she's going to tell you all about it real quick. And there's a link there. She's also going to give you a URL for those of you who prefer not to ever use hypertext. You know, and I understand. Like, one can never be too careful. But Emily, tell us what you can do for these people if they just hop on over to your Etsy store.
Well, the site is etsy.com/shops/Commodore Nick. And I sell everything from hats, there's some scarves on there. There's a tarot card mat if that happens to be part of your particular dork world. And lots of pot holders with some different 8-bit characters on them. It's very easy to
recognize. Like Mega Man? Yeah,
Mega Man, Mario, Zelda, Space Invaders, Ninja Gaiden. So.
And you can do custom work, too. I mean, that's really important here.
I do custom as well, yes. Anything. Absolutely. If you can think of it, I can probably replicate it with yarn.
She made me a bat wearing a jetpack. Okay, not a jet wearing a backpack, but a bat wearing a jetpack, and that is
no. But now I really want to make that too.
You really should. Like, now I want it. Now I feel like they're companion pieces. Like, one's an arch enemy of the other. But that's Commodore Nitz. K-N-I-T-S. Just so that you guys know, it's a clever pun. Clever. We've got to get to This Week in Dork Misogyny real quick. Our first guest tonight, so honored to have Ryan Daly here. This Week in Dork Misogyny. And we post all this stuff over on our Facebook, facebook.com/herdorkworld, his dork world. And we posted a thing this week that was about Paul Dini, and everybody probably knows him. He was one of the primary creators on Batman the Animated Series, Justice League, Superman the Animated Series, one of the principal architects of the DC Animated Universe, the greatest animated universe ever. And he was talking about Cartoon Network executives' reaction to female-based cartoons and female viewers. And Emily, he said blatantly, the network doesn't want them because they won't buy stuff. But you posted something, I think it was this morning actually, that belies such a notion.
Yeah, the movie Frozen, which features two female protagonists, not just one, but two, and one can assume has a...
Count
you know,
them both!
A you know, skewing very heavily female audience has sold out. The Disney cannot keep up with demand, and now there is a huge, you know, secondary market demand for like Frozen stuff, and you know, prices are apparently going crazy because they just can't keep up. That's how much little girls buy things.
Yeah, it's ridiculous anyway to think that you shouldn't make something based on merchandise. I mean, I know we live in a capitalist society, and we all know I would rather we didn't. That's a different show. But, excuse me, I do think it's just bizarre that you would exclude female viewers or not even cater to them at all because they don't buy toys. And as Kevin Smith said, Kevin Smith was in, conducting this interview with Paul Dini. He was like, hey, they'll buy something else. But even if they wouldn't, who cares? Who cares? Like, they don't even want girls to watch apparently on the same level as boys. They want they want the girls, I believe literally, Emily, they said, a step behind the boys. Whatever the hell that is supposed to mean. But if they're going to watch anyway, do you want them to watch? Why do you want them to be a step behind? And why can't you engage in thorough characters, storylines about female characters? Why can't you make thorough characters? I guess I could have said that. I didn't, Emily, and I'm very sorry.
Well, I think there's this idea that they have, these executives have in their mind that girls, you know, they probably will watch stories about boys. You know, there's just sort of an assumption, you know, if it's a kid's movie about like a boy character, like all kids are probably going to go to this. But if it's about a girl, only girls will go or be interested. So if you feature these characters, these female characters being just as strong, you'll turn boys away from it. Even, and I don't know if it does Disney own Pixar? I can never, there's all one company now.
Yeah, I think they bought Pixar around the same time they acquired Marvel.
When the movie Brave came out, there was a small amount of controversy because I guess originally they had wanted to call the movie after the main character. And they, you know, the decision was reached, no, we have to call it Brave because if we call it by her name, boys won't go. So we'll call it Brave and then, you know. Of course it's ridiculous, but that's just, you know, it's, whether these things are true or not, you know, even if it's not true, even if it should be irrelevant whether or not girls buy these toys, even if it's not true, that's just the idea they have in their mind, and they're just not going to deviate from that, even if evidence contradicts it.
Well, I'll tell you what, Emily, we're going to be talking some Black Canary tonight, and I wish that Black Canary was real just for a second so she could give those bigoted, chauvinist, misogynist executives that canary scream. You know, I mean, you know, for real. And she just scream at them until they understood, or went deaf, until they understood that women, that boys will watch stuff that girls like. For instance, and we're going to have to go to break after this, I do apologize. But I grew up in a time when I loved G.I. Joe, I loved the Transformers, I loved the Silverhawks, I loved the Inhumanoids, I loved the Centurions, but I also loved She-Ra and Jim because they were the same formula, same as like He-Man, and I got it, I liked that formula, and I didn't care if it was girls or boys. Plus, with Jim, I got to see the Misfits. Win-win, right?
Well, I think when you're talking about, you know, small children in particular, they don't know they're not supposed to like things until you tell them that they're not.
That's true. It's true.
They don't have these notions like, well, I'm a boy and therefore I can only play with these toys or be interested in these things until you, you know, just give them that idea over and over again until they internalize it.
Right.
It's not very
No, it's absolutely
with.
True. It's absolutely true. What's also true is it's time for a break, a little past time actually, but hey, this is her dork world, his dork world. The ladies and the guys can stay a little late if they like. Everything's a little more equal here. I'm Dean Compton alongside Emily Scott, VOC Nation Worldwide. You want to join us after this break and talk to Ryan Daly of BlackCanaryFan.blogspot.com. Excellent Black Canary blog. Even if you're not into the character, you should check it out, because ain't no way you're not going to be into this character after reading three or four of this gentleman's great entries. But if you want to join us, talk a little bit about Black Canary, 855-VOC-RADIO, 855-862-7234. On the other side of the break, fishnets, motorcycles, ninja kicks. This is her dork world, his dork world.
This is King Kong Bundy, and you're listening to the VOC Nation.
The godless voice of Crab Nation.
None of these assholes would have the balls to say any of this to anyone live.
I get hard as one of them stones. I'm going to hurl at a homosexual.
He's got 6 ounces of weed, and he's saving his roaches?
Bangable and diabetic.
Pass the car keys.
This is Stevie Wonder.
Free speech zone should just be the air, motherfucker.
Catch the crabs on Crab Nation Live weekdays.
Noon to 2 p.m. Pacific, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the VOC Nation.
Hey, I'm the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. Are you tired of paying high telephone and internet bills for your business? It's time to call NetCarrier, baby! If you're ready to take your phone service into the cloud, NetCarrier is the place to go to get the best in telecommunication service. Call NetCarrier today for a free analysis of your phone bills. 877-255-7733. That's right, 877-255-7733. Call now.
Looking for a DJ? Looking for someone to host your event? Then look no further. Philadelphia's hottest DJ and host, The Voice of Choice. The Voice of Choice has hosted the hottest events in the tri-state area. Book The Voice of Choice for all your karaoke, conventions, and parties. Go to www.vocnation.com for more information or email The Voice of Choice at voc@vocnation.com.
Hey there, hi there, ho there, thanks for coming on down. It's Save Wrestling, the podcast and the business making towns. Hear all about how I make towns and so much more every Monday, right before Raw, 6 p.m. Eastern, here on the VOC Nation. Adios.
The Voice of Choice here. Are you looking for a videographer for your event? Maybe a wedding, party, company video? Well, listen, Metro Media Studios is focused on providing high-quality service and customer satisfaction, and they'll do everything they can to meet your needs. They got a variety of services to choose from. They'll make sure that you get the professionally produced video of your dreams. MetroMediaStudios.com. That's Metro with an A, MediaStudios.com. Check them out today.
The Gold Club, Philly's hottest gentlemen's club. Only the finest ladies, the cream of the crop. If you don't believe me, then stop one by. The Gold Club, Philadelphia, is located at 1416 Chancellor Street. Or check out the website, www.worldfamousgoldclub.com.
This is TNA Knockout, Madison Rain, and you're listening to the VOC Nation.
Live from the In The Room studios located in the NetCarrier and Cloud, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Welcome back, folks. Hope you stuck with us through that break. You know, got to pay a few bills around the VOC Nation. You can't go worldwide without a little change. And speaking of change, we try and make some change here on Her Dork World, His Dork World. I'm Dean Compton. You probably know me from Sunday nights at 11:30 on Compton After Dark, but you probably remember Emily Scott a little better from this show right here. We're making some change, Emily. You know what I'm saying? We're getting this out there.
Say we're making some change.
Yeah, we're changing things about gender dynamics in Dork culture.
Oh, absolutely. For a second, I was like, is this some sort of, like, we're making some change, we're getting things done, like,
no, this ain't pressure luck, like, big bucks, come on, big bucks, don't wait, stop. No, it's not what's going on. I would say we're trying to change things.
We are definitely planting some seeds here.
Well, you know, one of the first seeds that was planted, Black Canary, starts out as a Golden Age character. Eventually, canonically, her daughter becomes the Black Canary that I know and love, and I think that you've come to know and love. But somebody who knows and loves Black Canary probably even more than me or you, we got him right here on the show, Ryan Daly. Been reading comic books for over 25 years. In 2012, he created Flowers and Fishnets, a great blog devoted to the DC Comics Black Canary, and you can get there at blackcanaryfan.blogspot.com. Ryan also does a webcomic strip. I suggest you go check it out. It's called Red and Green. Once you get over to Tumblr and check that out, redandgreencomic.tumblr.com. Ryan Daly, thanks for bringing your world into her dork world, his dork world.
Well, I'm glad that your two worlds had enough room for me. I'm happy to be here.
Hey, it's always room for one more. That's what we say down here in the South. Ryan, like I said, you know a lot more about Black Canary than I do. So why don't you give us a little overview of the character, a synopsis, and maybe even do a little better job than I did of pointing out the golden and, I guess, modern age Black Canaries.
Sure. First, let me put out a little disclaimer. I do not claim to be a Black Canary expert of any kind.
I anointed you. I did that.
I like the character. I haven't read every comic with her, but I've certainly read a lot of them. As you mentioned in the opening, she started off in the Golden Age of comics, towards the end of the Golden Age. She was created in 1947. She became a member of the Justice Society of America. And then about 20 years later, she becomes a member of the Justice League of America. And through many different sort of weird story events and changes in DC Comics continuity, they kind of separate the character into two different versions, and it's actually a mother-daughter separation that both women have sort of taken on the identity of Black Canary. So when you talk about Black Canary, you're sort of talking about two different characters, but basically the same identity as a superhero, with a few sort of subtle differences.
The biggest difference would be the sonic cry, right? Like, for our listeners don't know, Black Canary not only does some awesome ninja kicks in fishnets, but she is able to unleash a sonic cry. And most of our listeners, if they, you know, probably know Black Canary from recent media, like the Justice League Unlimited cartoon or the straight-to-video Superman Shazam that had that Green Arrow short on it.
Right. Or probably her biggest, I mean, this might be her most popular time in mainstream because she's on Arrow now. The character is kind of a regular character on the CW network show Arrow. But yeah, the original Black Canary, whose real name is Dinah Drake at first, she eventually gets married and becomes Dinah Lance. She was just a normal human. She wanted to be a police officer like her father, but it was in a time in the 30s and 40s when they weren't allowing many active police women. So she kind of channeled her urge to serve and make the world a better place and be a protector and a defender into a different avenue and sort of became this costumed crime fighter called the Black Canary. Then her daughter, Dinah Laurel Lance, essentially kind of the same type of story, except as you mentioned, the daughter, the younger one, has this superhuman ability, this sonic scream that they kind of call the Canary Cry. Where she can basically create destructive sonic waves with her voice. But both versions are expert fighters. They are some of the most deadly fighters in the world. I kind of liken her to Uma Thurman's character, the bride in the movie Kill Bill.
Right.
She's sort of like that in terms of her ability. She's mastered a lot of different kinds of martial arts.
Yeah, that's one of the things that Emily and I When we first started reading it, Emily, you're not as familiar with Black Canary as I was, and I think you were not, I don't want to say surprised, that's probably the wrong word, but when I told you that Black Canary in the DC Universe is a fighter, you know, one of the top 10 martial artists, probably top 5, somewhere in Batman's class, I think you were impressed, right, Emily?
I was absolutely impressed because I'm not necessarily familiar with too many female comic book characters or superheroes who are primarily like hand-to-hand combat fighters without having extra powers on top of that, like super strength or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even when she uses her sonic scream, her canary cry, that's always almost kind of been her secondary, her power, when sort of situations get too rough, too terrible, and she needs to kind of fall back on that. Her primary power has always been her physical combative abilities. She can kick and punch with the best of them. She's certainly not Batman's class, but she's in the upper echelon of world's greatest fighters in the DC universe.
Right. She's obviously not. Yeah, I mean, when it comes to Batman, like, I guess the only people who have ever gotten to beat him up are like Bronze Tiger and Lady Shiva. Like, that's it. I guess.
Right.
Bane.
Right.
But
and Lady Shiva holds Black Canary in high regard. So that's
right.
That's,
right. That's what I'm saying. She's not. She couldn't beat Batman, but she's in Batman's class. One of the things I want to touch on here, because, you know, we talk a lot about the gender dynamics, obviously, on her dork world, his dork world, is the combination between the social repression and sexual expression of Black Canary. And I'll talk to you about it first, Ryan, and then Emily, I want you to just, you know, chime right in when he's finished. You talk about her coming of age in a time when police women were frowned upon and women in any position of social prominence were frowned upon. Do you feel like that goes hand in hand with her outfit? Because her outfit is abjectly provocative and sexual. There's no getting around that. She's definitely, you know, she definitely is trying to put that out there, and she's doing it deliberately, unquestionably.
Mm-hmm.
And you think there may be with the, I mean, and you were playing a little, comic book Freud here, I guess, but there's a connection there, right? She was oppressed and repressed, and this is an outlet. Probably ties into why she likes kicking versus her cry as well. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, you kind of hit most of that. Her outfit, I mean, even in 1947, when the character was created, she wasn't showing a whole lot of skin, but the outfit itself, sort of the black leathers, the fishnets. She wears a blonde wig. The character, both mother and daughter, are naturally dark-haired, but they wear a blonde wig. It's part of the costume. It's part of the disguise. These are meant to be sexualized. They're meant to be provocative. And in a way, it could be used as sort of to disarm the opponent so that they kind of underestimate her abilities.
Sure.
But it is,
I wrote down a quote that really stuck out for me. That was, at one point she's talking to, I forget if it's the Huntress or somebody, you know, asking her about, like, why do you still wear those things? And her response is, all the judo in the world won't disarm a man like a pair of fishnets.
Absolutely. And it's, yeah, there is definitely a sense of sort of drawing that attention to her, making her a bit of a target, also sort of expressing herself. And it's also, I mean, for the simple fact, in terms of in publication, you want to draw attention to the reader's attention to the character in a medium where it's predominantly men in the sort of superhero world. It's predominantly male readers, certainly at the time. You want a female character to grab their attention. I don't necessarily agree that sex always sells, but it's certainly there is a sort of helping hand that goes along with it, and making the character provocative, making her sexy, is a way to make the character memorable.
As a general rule, I have no problem as a woman with a female character dressing provocatively or being scantily clad, as long as it's just not a constant titillation factor. And in her case, you know, there is definitely an intent there. And, you know, there's a tactical nature to it. And I also like the way that she disarms people who bring it up to her. Like, at one point in JLA Year One, the Flash says something to her about it. You know, like, why are you fighting in these high heel boots? It's just impractical. And she reaches up and grabs his mask and twists it around and is like, you're right, it is.
And keep in mind, it's that much more impressive. It's that much more impressive, not just because she pulled his mask around to prove the point that his mask was a liability, just as much a liability as her boots, but he's the fastest man alive, and he didn't fucking see it coming. That's how good Black Canary is, and that's how much she distracts. But Emily, I think we got a little bit away from what my point was, is trying to get in the head of Dinah Laurel Lance, perhaps, and you know, and her mom. The is And again, we don't know. These are fake characters. But it fascinates me to think that that's not just she dresses sexily because she has been told no in other arenas. This isn't, you know, I mean, necessarily a bad thing. She's like, I'm going to express myself. And she's going to express herself as a woman and always a woman is, which, you know, she's strong, capable, smart, but also she is a sexual being and you're just going to respect that. Or she's probably going to drive her motorcycle over your face.
Well, both versions of the characters have been depicted as rebellious. They both kind of struggle to fight against the sort of societal conventions or the parental conventions. The Dinah Drake, the original one, growing up in much older time, much more sort of socially conservative time with more draconian views about a woman's place, she is rebelling against that. She is dressing provocative and going out and doing what was perceived to be a man's job, in this case, a very dangerous and exclusive man's job, being a superhero crime fighter.
Sure.
And then even her daughter, Dinah Laura Lance, sort of is still rebelling against her mother's wishes. Her mother didn't want this life for her. Her mother wanted her to settle down and run a flower shop. And she's like, no, I'm going to get back at you by becoming a carbon copy of you. And doing all
which,
the things that you.
No, I just a quick question.
Which
I'm sure this is no secret or anything.
The whole time. Go ahead, Emily.
My assumption reading it was this is perhaps the inspiration for the character Silk Spectre in The Watchmen.
Yes.
Those two, Silk Spectre 1 and 2.
There are two inspirations for Watchmen, Silk Spectre. One is Black Canary and one is Nightshade. There's a Charlton character.
The interesting thing is that Black Canary's origin was kind of changing a lot throughout the 1980s, and the origin of the mother-daughter aspect and what we've been talking about kind of comes out right around the same time that Watchmen came out. So I'm not strictly sure whose idea it was first. It might have been Alan Moore's concept in Silk Spectre, and DC kind of threw the same idea onto Black Canary. Or Black Canaries might have been evolving first, and they use the same idea. They kind of came out really close to the same time.
I was always under the impression that it came first, but, you know, you're right. It's a very amorphous time for Black Canary. Not just Black Canary, but the entire DC universe, because the crisis on Infinite Earths is changing everything. And if you want to change everything about her dark world, his dark world, all you got to do is call. We got a phone number right here for you. That's 855-VOC-NATION, 855-862-7234, VOC-NATION worldwide. Lots of great things happening. Get over to the website. Look at all the shows. Look at all the drop-down menu. We are adding lots of new live content left and right. I want to start talking a little bit now about the actual works that we both read to kind of delve into Black Canary's head. And I feel like we read a lot of the seminal works. And since we don't want to get too convoluted, like this was New Earth, this is New 52, this is, you know, what have you, we'll just start, you know, we'll just say we'll do the New Earth Black Canary stuff, and we can kind of start at the beginning, and we can talk a little bit about JLA Year One, which Emily remarked, and I told her ahead of time, you know, I mean, I was like, this is a great, great comic book. It is a masterpiece, not just for Black Canary fans, but for any superhero fan, period. And Black Canary is treated very well, Ryan, in the book. Mark Waid really gets this correct. She's treated as strong and assertive. And even more importantly to me, she is definitely a woman in a man's world, and she doesn't care. Like, every time the guys do something chauvinistic or domineering, she gets in their face about it until they change. She doesn't have to change.
Yeah. Well, it's been said by a famous comic book writer that Mark Waid doesn't know how to write a bad comic.
No,
for my
doesn't.
Money, he might be my favorite comic book writer. Probably he's definitely up there. And yeah, this is a really strong case. It's a great book all around, and it's really a nice highlight for Black Canary as a character. Parenthetically, I will say that as much as I like this and as much as I like Black Canary, I don't like the change that she did become a founding member of the Justice League. I like Wonder Woman in that position. I always think of Wonder Woman as the founding member.
Really?
But as a different story with Black Canary as a member of the original member of the League, this is a really good story. And as you said, she has really great relationships with all of the other kind of members of the team. She's got a strong relationship with Flash. They almost kind of develop a romance throughout the story because they're both trying to find an identity for themselves kind of at the same time. They're both kind of living in two different worlds. Am I this civilian identity or am I this costumed Avenger? And they both kind of hit each other sort of at the same time, but then they end up going in opposite directions. But there's definitely this pull and a connection between them. And then you got her relationship with Green Lantern, and Green Lantern just wants to impress her. He just wants to look tough and
Flirt
with
her. Old jet pilot Hal. Old jet pilot.
That's one of the things that was very appealing to me about the character, both in JLA Year One and in her ongoing title or solo title, is this sort of just resigned and frustrated attitude she has to get when all of the men around her are constantly trying to save her or, you know, fix things. Or, you know, there's a great moment at in one of the volumes in the ongoing title where Green Arrow shows up and the Ray shows up and everyone's trying to, you know, and she's just thinking, God, this was supposed to be so simple. This guy shows up and he gets arrested and that's it. Now all of a sudden you guys had to show up and just, I had this under control, you know, and just, and I think every woman at some point in her life has had, you know, a guy or, you know, several guys try and help, which you just don't need it. You know, like,
right. And every guy's done that too. Every guy, myself included, lots of guys out there listening, VOC Nation 855, VOC Radio, if you want to play with us, talk a little Black Canary. I've definitely taken up for ladies who did not need my help and probably made the situation worse by doing so. Going back to JLA Year One, you say you rather Wonder Woman would have stayed in that spot, but eventually Black Canary becomes one of the best leaders of the Justice League of America. Wonder Woman is never really a good leader. I feel like Black Canary fits well in that role. Why would you take Wonder Woman over Black Canary? Obviously, no wrong answers here. I'm not like, listen up, you're wrong. This ain't nerd guy at the comic book shop with all those Pokemon cards, right? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You're listening. We don't like you. We don't like you. Go on, Ryan.
Well, selfishly, I do like Wonder Woman as a character more than Black Canary. I created this Black Canary blog in part because I looked around the internet and there were no shortage of Wonder Woman blogs and fan sites, and I felt like I could do more and do something different with Black Canary. And I also think Wonder Woman's iconic status, I mean, I feel like the Justice League should be the greatest of the greats. You should have Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman in there. But you're right, as you were saying, Black Canary did become the chairperson, one of the leaders of the Justice League for a time period. And I think
and a very formidable one. You know, there were lots of bad
leaders
around this time.
Part of that is
because
she is a naturally likable character. She kind of gets along with everybody. She has her moments where she's mad at everybody because of what we were just talking about, of them sort of trying to handle her and trying to kind of come to her rescue. But she is just a very likable and friendly character. She gets along with everybody. She's a great supporting character. So she's always kind of, when she steps into a position of leadership, men, women alike will defer to her. They will, because they respect her.
And she commands and demands that respect. As we see, like, as we go on in the miniseries, New Wings, Black Canary is in the process, I guess, of leaving Green Arrow. And I think it's really good. I think Sarah Byam is incredibly underrated as a comic book writer. And these were really good stories, really good Black Canary stories, unfortunately, in a time when they probably were going to sell. And there probably haven't been very many great times for Black Canary. Ironically enough, the sales that they got in, like, 92 for this would be, like, number one now, you know? I mean, times have changed. But Emily had, I don't want to say problems, we were chatting a little bit about the miniseries earlier, and she felt like it kind of glossed over the events of Green Arrow, the Longbow Hunters, right? Like, I had to even tell you what happened.
My main complaint, if I had one, and as you said, these are great stories, and they really get the character over well, and I was really enjoying them, but as somebody who, you know, this is my first introduction to the character, and I guess my assumption reading it is, you know, perhaps that would be the case for a lot of other people since this is her first solo title, you know, there was just, I think, an assumption of a certain level of knowledge that not having that took away something. It took away a certain level of appreciation and enjoyment I might have been able to have for it. Because, you know, I think a big part of her emotional arc in the story involves her feeling, you know, whatever it is that happened to her before the events of the story that only get very slightly alluded to, obviously have made her feel sort of helpless mm-hmm. and very vulnerable in a way that she is not used to feeling and is not comfortable feeling. And I feel like it would have resonated a lot more if I had been given any sort of a hint as to what it actually was that happened, because as it was, the fact that it wasn't mentioned made me pay more attention to it. Like, if their intention was we don't want to make her come across as a victim by focusing too much on, you know, this abuse that she endured or whatever, then they could have diffused that more just by getting and mentioning it, getting it over with, and then moving on, instead of making me as a reader sort of like fixate on that and be like, well, what did happen? And then never mm-hmm. getting that answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is, I think from the publisher's standpoint, DC was probably treating Black Canary's miniseries and then her ongoing series almost like a sister title to Green Arrow. And they were
That's
probably
exactly what I told Emily earlier.
The people who were coming in to read this book were probably already reading Green Arrow. They had the same editor and some of the same kind of creative people behind it.
To me, it's
yeah,
crazy that you would not try to go after a bigger audience. That you would not, and it wouldn't take much. It would only take a line here or there to make it more, you know, welcoming to new readers. And it's crazy to me that they would not at least, you know, attempt that or have that somewhat in mind. But apparently, that's just not the way that this business works.
Right.
Yeah,
there are things that I love about her solo books, and there are things that drive me crazy about them. I do think the scope could have been bigger. They could have been a little bit more ambitious in the stories that they were telling. I think they tried to keep it simple and relatively contained in a corner. And maybe that has something to do with why her ongoing series only lasted 1 year. She only got 12 issues.
Yeah, that's. I also surmise, and I'll have a comment about that, I surmise as well that they didn't want to focus too much on the events of Green Arrow, the Longbow Hunters, and I had to screen a call, so I don't know if y'all mentioned it, but Black Canary is tortured extensively in this and loses her canary cry and her ability to bear children, I believe, as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that she's – I think people say she was raped, but that's not what happened from what I understand.
She was tortured and sexually assaulted, although that
– Right.
The degree, the nature of that could be kind of varies. They're not explicit about what exactly happened, but
right, they changed their mind about it a little bit. And I think part of it was, you know, since she was a solo character now in a solo title, especially with Sarah Byam as a female writer, perhaps did not want her to come across as a victim, you know, like mm-hmm. you know, too much, so they didn't mention it very much. But then, like Emily said, she deals with the repercussions. And
right.
And yeah, another thing I was going to say, like you said, like DC probably didn't get behind it because they really thought, and I told Emily this earlier, they felt like the only people that were going to buy this were people who were already buying Green Arrow, and that's why like the breakup happens in Green Arrow. It doesn't even happen in Black Canary, and events happen in one.
It's confusing if you're
just other.
Reading this.
And I think that where they really blew it as far as the ongoing series goes is it doesn't feel like it's part of the DC universe until the very end. When you get the Ray showing up and the Huntress shows up and Nightwing shows up. Historically,
right.
What you have is you put those guest stars in the first few issues of a title to pump up
mm-hmm.
sales real quick. Like, you know, I mean, Titans weren't what they were in 1985, but that Nightwing still meant something. And they were getting behind the Ray fairly decently at that time. Probably could have helped both titles to have had him in earlier. But you know what helps this show, guys? Callers. And we got a caller on the line right now. And if you want to call us in, hey, we got lines open. 855-862-7234-855-VOC-Radio. Static is on the air wanting to talk a little Black Canary. Hey, thanks for coming to our world, Static.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
You are welcome.
So, yeah, I'm really famous in the community. I used to make fan comics online.
Cool.
I know. I just recently posted one. It's relative to the discussion where Black Canary was rubbing ham and cheese onto her nipples. It's Static, this is why you got to do it, dude, because I can't handle it.
You can't handle what? What are you doing? Is this funny?
I rub ham and cheese on my nipples.
Thanks, bro. Great call, guys. Thanks, guy. Anyhow, anybody wants to pull some bullshit like that again, we're just going to hang up on him. Apparently, Static's very famous in the community. I know somebody who's got two thumbs and doesn't give a fuck. His name's Dean Compton. You're not coming on this show and playing that bullshit, all right? You can go and you can stand in the corner at a Comic-Con and you can ogle some women and ain't nobody going to say nothing to you about it, son. But I ain't having it. Emily ain't having it. Ryan ain't having it. You're gone. I believe we were having a conversation about Black Canary. I believe that's what was going on. I believe we were talking about how she should have been integrated better into the DC universe. Go on, Ryan.
No, my head, all I can think about now is Static, ham and cheese.
Yeah. Well, fuck that guy. We're not having that. That's not, you know, it's, I don't even know why someone would listen. You know,
no, actually,
I mean,
as we were talking about sort of the scope of her book being kind of small and the ambition maybe being a little small, I think one of the other things that kind of has ill-defined the character that has kind of held her back is Black Canary doesn't really have an extensive or recognizable rogues gallery. You look at some of the big-tier DC heroes, and you can count on two hands how many villains they have.
But sure, sure.
In terms of characters created, like costumed villains, like supervillains, what we would associate with, Black Canary maybe has two or three that were created just for her, that she's not borrowing from another character, that weren't fighting the whole Justice League or the whole Justice Society. And one of them, one of my favorites, is in the seventh issue of her ongoing series. And it's a villain named Capoeira. I believe I'm pronouncing it right. It's a
Capoeira.
Capoeira, yeah.
I'm a big fan because I used to play Tekken 3, Eddie Gordo, and then like I changed him to Tiger, though, because I like it disco.
But the character, for the listeners who haven't read their book yet, the character is this very stylized Brazilian dancer, martial artist. He sort of, this, I guess it's kind of like pre-parkour, but Capoeira was a type of martial arts that used a very sort of fluid, almost dance style, and the character
exactly
looks a little bit like Zorro with like a flamenco dancer type of costume.
Yeah, he's also tied significantly to social issues, which is something I really liked about the Black Canary miniseries and ongoing series. Like he perceives himself as taking up for migrant workers and illegal immigrants.
Right, and with that kind of background of a character who sees himself as a revolutionary, but also with a very distinct visual element to him. This kind of dance form of martial arts could have been a very cool villain and a constant threat that you bring back that's like Black Canary's signature villain, because she's very combat and martial arts focused, and so is this villain, this Capoeira. But, spoilers, they killed him off at the end of that issue, and he's never been seen again.
Go ahead, Emily.
He definitely makes a pleasant change of pace, because the first couple of stories, the main antagonists, or at least one of the primary antagonists, are, I think the one is a politician and the one is like a land developer, but they're both very similar looking ginger dudes in suits.
Yeah.
And it was confusing to me at first. I'm like, wait, is this the same evil ginger guy? No, this is a different evil ginger guy. And like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One of these suits, like.
What about the, I forget the brother's name, there's a brother-sister assassin combo, and I really like them, and her name's Slide. I felt like that they
Blind
could come back
Blind
as well. But, what?
Blind, I think her name was.
I said Slide. I'm seeing the Y, and I'm thinking of a bullshit thing I got on my phone. She was great, and I really enjoyed their rapport and rivalry. And there was another. I wish we had seen her come back by the end of the series. But DC short-sightedness really paid off. And do you think that Mike Gold leaving had something to do with the cancellation as well? Because Diddy O'Neill took over, and we'll talk about Green Lantern number 78 in a little bit. I respect Denny O'Neill and like Denny O'Neill, but at this time, Black Canary, no way that could be a priority for the guy who was running the Bat books.
No, well, you also look at which characters are guest starring at the end of her series. Nightwing and Huntress, both members prominently from the Bat family of books, and that was Denny's. That was Denny's element. It might have had something. I mean, I'm kind of on the fence about my feelings about Mike Gold because he did use her a lot during Mike Grell's run on Green Arrow. Black Canary was
fantastic
a major
run
support.
Too.
Yeah, she was a major supporting character in that book, but she wasn't always treated respectfully. A lot of times she was just used as kind of a nagging kind of housewife who was just kind of bringing Ollie down. Ollie just wanted to party. He just wanted to go out and be righteous crime fighter and do it. And she always had to bring him down with like thoughts about responsibility and accountability. And I don't think she was always presented as nobly as she could have been in Green Arrow. So
that's why I like to see the flip side of that. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I was about to introduce you to so that you could say what you seem to be about to say. So it seems like we're on the same wavelength. Look at us.
Indeed.
Go ahead.
I have never read any Green Arrow comics. I'm, you know, just sort of peripherally aware of the character since he is Dean's number two favorite superhero. But I'd likely we get to see the flip side of that because so often, you know, we get presented with girlfriend or wife characters who are just this sort of, you know, nag, like, oh, you're the buzzkill, like, you know, talking about responsibility and blah, blah, blah. And so it's nice to see Black Canary be like, no, you're screwing me over. You're ruining everything because you want the stupid shiny new bow and, you know, then have sex to make
bow.
Up for the fact I'm mad at you.
It's one of the best moments of her first issue of the New Wings miniseries. It's when she has that fight with Ollie, and she's like, you know what? You stay here and figure out how we're going to survive this month and pay rent. And I'm going to go off and have, like, a vision quest in the woods and find myself. I'm going to go ahead.
That may have been the moment that she stepped out of Oliver Queen's shadow into her own son.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's interesting how much of a dick he comes off as in her storyline. Like, I would seriously dislike this character if that's all I knew about him, is what I have presented. I realize this is, like, a tumultuous time in their relationship. They're going through a breakup, whatever. But, like, he really just comes across as, like, the world's biggest douchebag.
Yeah, he does. He's not presented favorably in that issue, which is kind of funny.
You're feeling her frustration right there with her. Like, God, how bad would you be if some dick did this? Like, of course you'd be mad.
Right.
To be fair, I told Emily this, too. He's not, I mean, he's treated, you get his side of the story a little better in his issues, but his side of the story is pretty much that he's been a jerk.
Right. And, oh, by the way, I think at the same time he was cheating on her and getting another woman pregnant. So.
Yes. That is correct. And then still went to cheat on her with another woman, too. So that's what I'm saying. Like, there is no – he has – it's amazing that I love this guy so much because at this moment in his career, he has no redeeming qualities. Of course, this ain't a show about Green Arrow. It's a show about Black Canary. It's her dork world, his dork world. And if you ain't going to call up and be an inane idiot, why don't you pick up your phone, 855-VOC-RADIO, 855-862-7234. Do want to apologize to the listeners for getting a little salty and a little irate and agitated, but do things that we don't come into somebody else's house like that and act that kind of rude. So when somebody does, you kick them right the hell out, don't you? Anyhow,
nope.
I want to talk a little bit about Green Lantern number 78. And we'll definitely come back to her solo stuff to finish out the show. We've got about 11 minutes left. Green Lantern number 78 might be the most insulting comic to women aside from Avengers number 200 I've ever seen, Ryan.
It's, you know, you bring this up, this issue, my review of it just went up on my blog, blackcanaryfan.blogspot.com. It just went up about 48 minutes ago. And I
everybody scamper on over there.
It is a very dated comic by today's standards. It is a classic. It's well-remembered, and the run of Green Lantern and Green Arrow by Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams is well-lauded and highly respected, and it should be. But it focuses so much on the politics of the time that you can't really separate it from that time period. And certainly the gender and political issues in issue 78 can't be escaped. And if you read the issue today, Danny O'Neill is essentially writing about sort of the Charles Manson murders, but
right.
he's creating this cult leader with supernatural powers, and he just completely brainwashes Black Canary and turns her into a slave.
Which later Green Arrow will say was her fault. And what year was this? What, I can't remember. Is it 73, 74?
No, this was early. This was, I think, 1970 or 71.
Oh, a little earlier than I thought. I'm thinking Punisher years. But, yeah, basically at the end of the issue, Green Arrow's like, hey, it was basically your fault, Black Canary. If you didn't have evil in you, it wouldn't have worked. And that's just
exactly.
That's just downright wrong. Right?
He basically says there was something inside
go
you
ahead,
that,
let Ryan
that
go.
Made you easy prey.
Go ahead.
He says there was something about you that made you easy prey for this guy. So.
Emily?
Like, you're
sorry,
welcome
Emily,
for not shooting you, Green Arrow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because when you look at those and this is true of lots of stuff, like when we watch like Will and Grace now from the 90s, at the time it was seen as contemporary and really, you know, cutting edge and wow, how forward thinking. Now you look at it, it's very insulting, very offensive, and it's kind of the same about this comic. I mean, there are lots of good politics, but like many radical leftists been, and unfortunately now, and being a radical leftist, I see this, they forgot that women are just as important as men. And Denny O'Neill, I don't think it was purposefully, but he definitely lost sight of any human rights or civil liberties campaigns that he was, you know, like for Native Americans and stuff that he was talking about there as soon as he treated Black Canary so badly, in my opinion. You know, it's hard to take his pious stances on other issues seriously, Ryan, when you see this.
Right. I mean, but yeah, and that's definitely the way it looks today. But at the same time, he did make the character an integral part of this partnership, the Green Lantern, Green Arrow partnership. She became kind of the third part of this group, and she was very popular in this very popular group. So I kind of want to cut him a little bit of slack because he made her more popular than she was at the time, and Neil Adams drew her better and sexier than she had ever looked before.
Oh, yeah, Neil Adams is a genius. So, I mean,
there are definitely some cringeworthy moments in the story today, but I still want to respect you guys for putting her in this book and elevating her accessibility and her visibility.
Well, Emily, what do you think? I mean, I kind of agree to an extent. You know, I mean, the times they change, and like I think this was bad even for that time as far as women go. But
that's what
it
was
more
gonna
overlooked,
say.
Right? I mean, you know, I mean, it was just more acceptable then. I think it was still bad, but like he felt like as long as If you talk to like ladies like Cynthia Peters or Lydia Sargent, who were part of that wave of feminism in the late '60s, working with the Bread and Roses Collective in Connecticut, they'll tell you that like that's just kind of how it was.
Well, it certainly was more that way then than now, but it's still, even, you know, knowing it came out in 1970, just seems bizarre. Like the whole time, I was just like, what am I reading and why? Like,
well, you're reading it for the show.
Right, but no, I just mean like from the perspective of somebody writing this, like, what are you even trying to, you know, convey to me? This isn't particularly entertaining, or I don't know. Because there are a lot of things that now, looking back, you can still maybe appreciate the entertainment value of them or certain aspects of it, even if the politics of it have not aged especially well. But with this, I was just kind of like, I don't really know what I just read.
Well, it does look good. We can all agree on that, right? Neil Adams is great.
Yeah.
What do you think, Emily?
Just the art?
Yeah, the art. I'm asking you, but yes.
Oh, yeah, the art's good, yeah.
The art's great, yeah. You know what I mean? So at least it has that going for it. Got about 5.5 minutes left in the show. We could get in a quick call if somebody's out there and is not going to mention ham or cheese. 855 VOC Radio, 855-862-7234. VOC Nation, worldwide. Happy to be doing the show. Happy to have a space that's safer than most to talk about these kind of things. I want to start with you, Ryan. If there is a moment that's kind of the apotheosis of Black Canary for you, what is it?
There are a couple of great little short stories and origin tales sprinkled throughout She's appeared in so many kind of backup stories and other features.
She was in Wonder Woman and then Action Comics.
Yeah, and in World's Finest Comics. She's almost never been out of publication since the late 60s. She's always been appearing somewhere.
Right.
But I think for me, maybe my favorite Black Canary story, my favorite kind of Black Canary saga, is in issues of Birds of Prey when Gail Simone was writing it. Particularly issues, I think, 62 through 67 or 68. Yeah. You can find them all collected in one trade paperback called Sensei and Student, or they're available digitally on Comixology. But this particular storyline I really like because, as we mentioned sort of at the beginning of the show, Black Canary is forced to team up with Lady Shiva, and Lady Shiva is probably the world's greatest assassin. And they both had the same sensei. They both had trained under the same martial arts master. And they go to see him on his deathbed, and he kind of inadvertently puts them on a mission together where they have to work together. And you learn more about how really, really strong and how really powerful Black Canary is as a character by the way Lady Shiva treats her. When you've got a woman as dangerous and deadly and well-respected as Lady Shiva, and she's really putting Black Canary up on a pedestal, it's hard not to think, okay, Black Canary maybe deserves a lot more credit than she gets.
Top five fighters in the DC
universe. Also within these stories, there is a subplot mystery where we kind of flash back to her mom's adventure, like her mom's final case as the Black Canary, and her daughter, the current Black Canary, has to end up solving that decades later. So there's just a lot of great Black Canary moments within these issues of Birds of Prey.
And even aside from that, there are great Oracle moments. Oracle, you know, a great character as well, is treated incredible during this arc. And is shown to be incredibly powerful, even outside of her information nest, if you will. Emily, did you get to read these?
Wait, which ones? The Birds of
Prey?
Yeah. Yes, I did. And it was really great to see, you know, we talked a few weeks ago about the Killing Joke and about Barbara Gordon, and it was great to finally see that character after the events of the Killing Joke, and I really enjoyed it.
If
you're interested in strong female characters, if you're interested in strong female characters, Birds of Prey is a place where you'll find great character moments. Occasionally splattered with some nice cheesecake art that makes them look sexy, but beyond that, they are just fully realized, independent, strong women.
They're people.
And so much of that is credited to their writing.
It's nice that we see not just her, we see, you know, her and Black Canary and, you know, Shiva, and they're all, you know, there's female antagonists as well, and it's just nice to see, you know, when you are used to the flip side of that, it's nice to see a world that is mostly populated by females. It's not something that, you know, I have had really any previous experience with in the comic book world.
Guys, we are just about out of time. I really appreciate you coming on. Ryan, why don't you tell us where we can talk to you? I know all of our listeners are going to get at you. Probably Static, too. Sorry, you're just going to have to deal with him, I guess. But tell us where we can, where our folks can contact you and what you got going on.
My blog that I update pretty regularly is blackcanaryfan.blogspot.com. You can contact me on Twitter. Handle is @blackcanaryfan. I've also got a side project with a friend of mine named Paul Scovito. We do a webcomic every weekday called Red and Green. The Tumblr for that is Red and Green Comic. There is a Facebook page for that and a Twitter feed that is Red, the letter N, the letter or the word green, comic. So you can follow any of those projects.
Well, right on, Ryan. We really appreciate you coming on tonight. Thanks for taking a little time out. It's been Her Dork World, His Dork World. Emily Scott with us tonight. Emily, say goodnight.
Good night.
You can locate us over at Facebook, facebook.com/Her Dork World, His Dork World. We're on the Twitters for all you kids, HDW, HDW Radio. Hey, join us next week. I can't wait to do this next show. But we're out of time. I'm not even going to be able to tell you about it. That's how far this has gone down. Her Dork World, his Dork World. Thanks, everybody.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.